Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
At the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and I guess the signal dropped, but that's okay because it was the top of the hour. We needed to take a break anyhow. I'm with Buff Bradley for a few more minutes. Al Stahl is apparently on the grounds, actually, now. So, Al, in fact, he must have been listening because there I was saying that he wasn't coming until tomorrow, but he said, I am. He sent me the text. I'm here now. So, pretty funny. A couple more minutes with Buff, though. Where were we?
I don't know.
That's how fast this moves.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
No, I think everybody here is excited about the sales. I've walked the barn area and the consigners and the buyers that are out there. You can really tell that there's some people that are nervous, but there's a lot of excitement too, and it's they feel like this is this is where they're going to get their horse.
Speaking of Flight Line that came up a little bit earlier, word has come that with an announcement that Flight Line has got a home for his post-racing career. He's going to go to Lane's End, and that's a story that we might be able to touch on with either Lane's End people or I know John Sadler's here. I wouldn't mind. I actually went and launched into a bit of a Kentucky Downs recap. And John Sadler, of course, was part of that. I think let's see if we can't flag him down at some point. I thought that was that Al over there. No,
I
went past the wall there and so, all right. Well, we'll catch him. We'll catch him up. What? 1 o'clock, right? 1 o'clock both days?
1 o'clock. 1 o'clock today and tomorrow.
Let me give you the other Saturday results, too, while we're doing this. How about Larry Ravelli? Ravelli. Got one-timer, back to a good race. And he wires. That's what I was starting to talk to you about. How when we got disconnected, the way in which that turf course that had for the, and here's Al Stahl now. Yeah, come on, the perfect timing. The way in which, and Al can talk to this, the way that turf course was basically giving it up to horses from off the pace, and then on Saturday, all of a sudden you got horses wiring. I mean, yes, they took down the rails last year. Though when they took down the rails, it was not the place to be. The horses were getting bogged down on the inside,
right, yeah.
And then the new ground, the fresh ground on Saturday, the horses. Well, some like it hot, brown.
Horse of Steve Asmussen's came. Well, that was on Thursday, won the stake.
Yes.
Jimmy Creed,
yes.
Horse came up the rail.
Private Creed.
Mm-hmm.
But one-timer wired and some like it hot brown and Delica as well. So it just was interesting. Campanelle, a predictable winner, of course, in the sprint as well. And we talked about Red Knight. So those were the six stakes. And when we talk to Hammer, we'll get the lay of the land for tomorrow and Wednesday, the last the completion of the Sunday card, and it's going to be gorgeous. I mean, the whole week is going to be gorgeous.
Right. All right, I'm running.
You
I'll give this to Al, and you let me know if you need anything.
Yeah, Buff Bradley, everybody, and just always a pleasure. And in this new capacity, particularly, yeah, just right there, it's fine. Thanks, Buff. Appreciate it, Buff Bradley, everybody, and. Little Al Storm. What else? Come here. Explain this. This is funny. I can tell already this is funny. Grab that headset. Buff, take the stick mic. And the Churchill, of course, is now, you know, basically it's an armed camp to get in. What's the secret?
Well, they had shut down the back gate during COVID, which was understandable because they had to check everybody coming in.
They just forgot to open it back up.
And Al was missing works, and everybody was trying to talk to him, open the back gate. And I went back there a few times, and all the trainers back there were complaining about it. And it just made sense for him to open it back up and getting a guard back there and doing it. And they got it done.
It's good for the vets, too, because
yeah, it's the vets.
You get behind a paint truck, a carpentry truck, a van with the speed bumps, and you're just putzing along while your horses are on the track backing up. You miss them jogging. And
He's missing.
Yeah, I'm way in the back corner.
Well,
I
know you hang out by the track super, by the garage with the track.
That's my galloping spot.
That's your galloping
spot. My workers, I'm up by the wire. So, yeah, it's complicated.
We can't have him missing works. You know, Al can't miss a work.
So. No, absolutely. We get paid for that.
I got that photo. Mark Cassie and Tina, they're the Cassie team. I got that great picture of you up on the
right,
up
right.
on that
we still
patrol
know
judge.
We still know whose name that is. Who that Glenn's something? Is it Glenn? I mean, I've bus been around longer than I have. There, remember, there's a sign there. It's on your picture. It's dedicated to somebody.
Yeah,
Glenn Webster.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Maybe it might be Glenn. If it's Glenn Webster, then that's obviously.
No.
But
yeah.
Maybe if it's Glenn, maybe it's somebody else. If it's Glenn Webster, that makes sense. He was
right.
He died in 2001. I know that.
Yeah, on Oaks Day.
Yeah, on Oaks Day. Maybe if it said Glenn, that's who it is. Then.
Mm-hmm.
But that area is dedicated. It used to be Carl Bowman's stomping grounds.
Glenn, I'm not really sure though.
Yeah. But there's a sign on there on that photo that he took of me a few years ago.
Well, Al, thanks for making me famous. I got to go.
Okay. All right. Thank you,
Buff.
Keep up the good work,
everybody. That is too funny. And you know, I'm going to look for that picture, but Al, since we started on this topic, I've mentioned Delica's win, and we'll get to it, and we'll talk some sales. But let's actually deal with the sadness first. For those that didn't see Marty McGee's blurb about it, it's got to be what, a week now?
Two weeks from today.
Well,
my first day back from Saratoga.
Well, the passing of Ed Moss, explained to everybody in terms of more than a staffer, obviously.
Right. Well, Edward was a born and bred New Orleans guy. Grew up in the St. Bernard housing development, which before Hurricane Katrina was considered the roughest place in the city, one of those kind of places where the cops don't go in there. And he smart enough to get out of there and come to the racetrack. And his uncle used to work for Frankie Brothers and myself, and he was a racetrack character, and he brought this little skinny guy with him, and they come and go, you think, but that was in the mid-90s, and Edward basically stayed around all the way till his death a couple weeks ago. And you know, he was, you know, you hear this all the time on the racetrack, but he was a family member for us. There's my wife has pictures, Nicole has pictures of him basically babysitting our kids at the zoo. We take him with us, and I'm busy looking at the animals. He's more worried about the kids running off, and he's chasing them down. He was just a good-hearted guy, and didn't really care about the big races and the betting and things like that, like a hardcore racetracker. It was just a good place for him to do his work and enjoy himself. And he was literally loved by one and all. It's a corny statement, but it's very true for Ole Edward. And we had a ceremony for him this past Friday in the Pat Day Chapel. Chaplain Joseph was kind enough to orchestrate for us, and he had some family in Kentucky, and it was very, very emotional, a whole lot more emotional than I ever thought it was going to be. End up being kind of a typical New Orleans type thing with some singing and people kind of hugging and semi-falling out, and it was a good last respects for Edward.
I talked to Nicole on Saturday, and she had put that photo. I'm going to put it up on Twitter for those that didn't see it yet. And Marty was kind enough. I know a lot of people didn't make it into the paper, into the form, but it was on the website. Marty dedicated the opening of a notebook last week to Edward Moss as well. And Nicole said something that choked me up, that when they went to do the welfare check and found him, and apparently you predicted that
if he
wasn't at the barn, something was badly wrong, but they found him with that personal shank over
his
shoulder.
Yeah, he always had a shank like a sash, looked like a bandito with his bullets, and yeah, there it was. He always had his own, you know, he was the kind of guy I didn't care if he had his own shank, took it to his room. I wouldn't let too many other people do that, but we weren't worried about him. And he was just, he was always there for us. And he took a little time off years ago, and I forgot what it was all about, until his sister did a little, after I did a little eulogy, his sister came on, and she mentioned that she needed help raising her two nieces up there in Louisville, Kentucky, because that's where they ended up after Katrina. And, he left us for about a year and a half, and I thought he was just sitting around doing nothing. But he was helping his sister raise two young girls. And I met them for the first time at the ceremony this past Friday. It was Nicole's first time to meet him, too. But he was just a good-hearted guy, and family came first. And we're all going to miss him, quite obviously.
How many years?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking something in the mid-90s, so whatever that is, 25 plus.
Wow.
He was 62.
That's how old I am. That's scary as well. A hard living.
Yeah, hard sort. Living. Yeah, he lived life. I mean, we're not going to pull any punches. Edward did his thing, you know. He liked drinking, and he was a fun, loving guy, but it didn't get in the way of his work, that's for sure.
Now, I wanted to make sure, and I'm going to put this picture up right now, this composite that Nicole sweetly put together for the ceremony last week, Edward Moss. We go out of our way, Al, to celebrate racetrackers and this lifestyle. Taking that kind of time, and I could tell just talking to Nicole how much how much a part of the family he was, and that's what the shed basically is. It's all family.
Yeah, no question. And he exemplified that for sure.
Well, you also have had a chance, and now a consistent opportunity to win for Paul Varsho, and Dalika's win on Saturday. This was a horse and a client that you've really wanted to get a good horse for, and that has come to pass, and then some.
Oh yeah, well, Paul's been a friend, a college type friend, however long that is now, coming up on 40 years, and he's a real student of the game and smart guy, and did very well in his personal business life, and he's got some time, and he's got a son who enjoys the game, his family enjoys the game, so he's on the board at Churchill, and he's just a good guy, period. And I didn't have a whole lot to do with acquiring these horses, these good ones. She came from Germany, Case Clay and Paul put the deal together, and Dalika's been unbelievable for us, and in good spirits. Steve Young purchased her, and she's going to sell in November sales, a graded stakes winner of almost $750,000, and so she should do well being a Gosapper mare. And we've got a few things we're looking forward to coming up. Repealing is going to run in the Dogwood straight three-year-old filly race, and Steve bought that filly right here at Keeneland, and I think it was Keeneland. It might have been somewhere else. But so, you know, he puts together a nice little team, and I'm happy to train whatever they send my way. And we didn't start so well, but things have got going very well lately, very good lately.
Well, and certainly the win on Saturday, you mentioned In Good Spirits, who, of course, ran later on the card. And Nicole was very, very happy that Delica won, because that guaranteed the you know, a nice drive back to the Ville.
Yeah. I mean, everybody says Kentucky Downs are great, everything. But if you're a horse person and you drive all the way up there and your horse doesn't run that good, it's not that fun. But if you go up there and you win, it's really fun. So it's a double edge. But yeah, so we had a nice drive back, and she's, now that she's gotten older and maybe has a breather this winter, or she's very comfortable in her own skin, she's gotten really consistent, which is, she was a little bit spotty as a younger horse. So it's interesting how that changed like that.
Well, she's six, and it's just funny because we talked just now with Buff about. Horse identification and watching babies, you know, whether weanlings to yearlings to two-year-olds, and projecting, you know, the physical and where the growth's going to come from. And I've asked this of a few people that get European horses. I most recently, I think Chad Brown talked about it a little bit. How different is it when you get a horse like this and you don't necessarily know where the physical, where the properties, and you know, this is a Pastorius out of a Hurricane Run mare, and so, you know, you don't necessarily see these physicals. Is it generic? I mean, when you see a horse that comes to you, you know, at three, let's say, and you're wondering, all right, they got 2 years of maturing to do. Can you just see it, Al? I mean, physically and how they look, no matter what their pedigree is.
Well, she was spotted off of a race. She was had some sort of trip at a smaller track in France, Fontainebleau maybe or something like that. I'm thinking Case Clay was dealing with Crispin de Mowbray. He's a real tall guy, nice guy. I met him at the November sale 1 year, and he's kind of you need eyes and ears over in Europe, and Chad's got that, obviously. They got that figured out, and you kind of think of something that might acclimate to America and run well. So that's how you get it started, and the price has a lot to do with it. But once you get the horse, Charlie Whittingham used to run him right off the plane. And whether an owner liked it or not, he'd send him out to San Luis Rey and just said, you can just forget about this horse for about 7 months and let him get acclimated to America. So I've kind of, followed that plan. Once you get him here, get him acclimated, then they'll tell you like a regular horse where they belong. And obviously you're heading towards grass. But this filly changed so much. I mean, we had trouble training her. She was very aggressive, and she was aggressive and inconsistent in her races. And just when you thought she might be putting it together, she'd throw a race that would be, completely, you couldn't find an excuse for it. So we just persevered with her, and we freshened her and let her come to herself. And it took a while, and now she's finally here. And Paul's main goal of giving her the winter off last year was to come back and take shots in bigger races, and hence the Diana. And then the Beverly D was just there for us on a silver platter. And we got the grade one, and now she's a seven-figure earner. And, she's just been – we have so much fun. I've already talked to Paul yesterday about her, talked to Paul this morning about her. I'm sure we'll talk to more. She's just walking around the shed row, we'll talk about her, you know. So, it's just one of those things that came together, and we're going to enjoy this ride.
Well, and you know, clearly she's – interesting from a few aspects. She started her career in Germany at Köln and then Dresden before coming to Chanty in the Herod, and then pretty quickly second start in North America, you won that allowance. I remember, I think our first real conversation about her probably came when she won maybe the One Dreamer, or it might have been last winter, really, when she won the Big Al.
Yeah, well, she You know, I'm looking here with you. Yeah, I mean, this race, this Valley View, was an outstanding race on soft going. And then she'd go down to Pago Hop. You think she'd be laid down there, and she laid an egg, and she was getting rank on us, so we shortened her up. And, I mean, if you look at the versatility, you know, on May 21st, yeah, she wins going 5.5 furlongs. And then you come back to Churchill Downs on May, 366 days later, and she gets beat a dirty one going 1.5 miles, you know. So, I mean, think about that. That's some serious versatility.
Well, exactly.
And, we were just learning as we went along with her, because she really wouldn't tell you. She would just, every day she just charged down there like a freight train. And we figured she might have been leaving a little something on the racetrack on these off races. And so we just going to Skylight and train her the wrong way and late and out there in a country setting has really helped her get off the bridle and settle in. So, but we were really happy that she finally put two back together with the Beverly D and the one last Saturday. But she's in good form right now. She's very sound. She's a hardy horse.
She has won on fast, on yielding, on good, on soft, and twice now.
And short and long.
Short and long and down the hill. And, yeah, on this course, right, twice.
I mean, what more can you ask? I mean, I can't wait to see who Paul breeds her to, because there will be some thought into it. With that factor in mind, I'll help him with the physical as much as I can. And, you know, of course, he'll work on the pedigree. But a very interesting horse who would outcross with basically every horse in the world, unless you'd go back to Germany. But the guy, he's a, I don't want to say like a Will Farish, but Gestut Ammerland is a big hitter in Germany. And he's changed his whole breeding program with drawn to race or drawn to run. She's been bred to the horse that starts with a V who won the Arc. And now she's in foal to, I want to say, might be in foal to someone like Frankel or something in a sale over there. So
wow.
he's you know, that the way she performed in America, and they've contacted us about that. They've completely altered how they've managed the mother, and they've gone straight up the ladder. So he's obviously a big player, this guy, and I just like I said, we just. Everybody got lucky. So
you know what's funny, and you can attest to this, I'm sure. There are mares who get great horses from common stallions, and don't necessarily need to have elite stallions to produce and you know, throw something, you know, really good. I mean, I just had the Buff on. Look at what his dad did with Bowman's Band, right?
Right.
Groupie was by Bowman's Band, and Brassy was by
Dixie Union or something like
no,
that?
No, Pivotal, maybe? No.
Oh, Pivotal's a Danzig,
not,
I think. No, yeah.
Not Pivotal.
It'd be an American horse, for sure.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to look up Brassat now. But that's a mm-hmm. funny phenomenon.
Yeah, well, it is. Like, I mean, I've talked to Seth Hancock about that before. He said sometimes, you know, too much sugar on sugar is bad for you, you know.
That's funny.
That's what he said. If you watch some of the Claiborne mares, you'll see a horse going to a lesser type stallion, and you'll get a nice animal.
Prized,
yeah, okay.
Prized. I knew it started with a P.
Right. I was close. Dixie Union's this tall, and Prized can't fit in this room.
Do you have anything else to run? I didn't check.
Yes, Wednesday. We've got two in Wednesday.
Let's take a look.
Two live ones.
Let's see what's well. Now we're talking.
Yeah, I know what you're getting at. You know, come on. We're here for two things only, Steve: food and shelter.
You're the greatest. Well, are you going to now? You got what about Audaciousness running back?
Yeah. Well, she's in Wednesday. So she scratched. She wouldn't have run.
When you show back up
with a maiden, you're automatically scratched. So she's in the last race of the whole meet.
She's in the 12th on Wednesday.
Yeah, there's a real George has a real salty looking horse from New York, but other than that, I think she's she might like this mile trip on the turf, you know, with the smart strike mare and Munnings. So
oh yeah, I now that you say that, because I knew that CJ had I noticed that horse and then saw that it had scratched yesterday when I did the changes. CJ Thoroughbreds, of course, and this is actually bred by the Graham Motion team, right? Herring Swell.
Yeah, yeah. He owns the mare. Graham has called me about this before. I think he's
Striking Impact.
Yeah, that he actually owns the mare.
How about that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's the breeder.
Isn't that funny?
So he's rooting hard. but yeah, she's in good shape, and she got excluded and also eligibles, and was just hit and miss. You know how it can be over there. But she, like I said, we think she'll run a nice race on Wednesday.
Well, that's Buff. What happened to you? hold on, I got to get back. Let me get back to Team Stall on this, and there we go. You poke around Equibase. You ever?
Use it,
right?
No, I use it. I use it because it's got a lot of that horseman section has condition books and scratches and things like that.
There we go. So Audaciousness with Julian Leperu in the 12th. Then earlier on the card in the allowance, here's Evan Singh. This one, this is a homebred, Norman Chang.
Yep, Norman Chang's, lives in Taiwan. His cousin, Tony Fang, is hooked me up with his brother-in-law, I'm sorry. Good guys. Bred a really nice horse here. And did a little racing in California for years, Norman did, and just... You know how horses have kind of moved away from California, and I was the lucky recipient of this horse, and nice looking horse who ran a good race short at the fairgrounds, and the natural progression we thought were to stretch him out, and his two turn races at Churchill weren't just thrilled with how he finished, so naturally we backed him up at Saratoga, and we had no idea how he was going to run that day. He fired like a real horse. I mean, Jose just basically point him in the right direction, and he just whistled, blew right past Thin White Duke,
who turned and won the stake.
Second the stake and won the stake as a one other than. Pretty game move for old Phil and David Donk.
And Steve Crist.
Yeah, and Steve Crist, yeah. So anyway, form held up pretty well, and we had him on. He was the first horse out in the 600,000. Horse racing God smiled on us. We wouldn't have... If we'd gotten in there, we wouldn't have beat that Ravelli horse in the last race on Saturday, who just went to the front and freaked. So we had this two other than as a backup race, and here we are. So
smart.
5-2. So we're looking forward to him. And Jose has talked to me about him twice already when I saw him down there, and he looks good and everything's on go. So I heard y'all talking about the biases of the track. I hope a mid-pack closer or whatever can fire, because that's where we'll come from, a little bit off the pace.
What's your read on that, and how, I mean, here it is, a two-week period ostensibly out, and last year when they took those rails down, the new turf, the clean turf on the inside was not the place to be, and then Saturday, it completely was.
Well, it was super firm. They didn't water it because they thought the rains were going to hit it for Saturday. So it was pretty, it was fresh and firm.
How about that?
Yeah, so that's what, I mean, Paul and I talked about that. I forgot who told me about the watering when I was down on Thursday. Someone gave me a little bump on that, and they do that before. They do that for obvious reasons. You don't want to wet it, put the sprinklers on, all of a sudden have a deluge, and then you've created your own personal bog. So, but the rain didn't come. So I'm assuming that's what happened on Saturday. But rail positions are so tricky. I mean, I'm obviously a fairgrounds guy. The position of the rail on the turf course of the fairgrounds just makes all the difference in the world on how races are, like you like to say, the flow of a race. Whether the riders do something different or just feels different for the horses, I don't really know what it is, but it is something that a handicapper needs to pay very close attention to when they move those rails back and forth.
Well, and I mean, not that every horse wired that was inside. However, I mean, one timer got to the front and just kept going. Campanelle figured, prominent and wins. Red Knight came from off the pace, and really any of three horses could have won. And frankly, I needed Chris Block with another mystery in
big number there.
The worst way, yeah, at 15-1.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned Bran and the win I thought I had a very funny tweet, considering how much everybody busts on John Sadler for not being able to win. I said, here it is in September, and John Sadler's winning in Kentucky already before he ever shows up with Flightline. And now he's got this Bran that wins that turf sprint. And Victor Chamonix, how much I think he's no longer a secret, Chamonix.
I've never met him. He was down at the fairgrounds a little bit hanging around with Tim Hamish, who maybe we need to discuss a little bit about him if you want me to. He was shot this morning at Churchill Downs. I'm not at Churchill Downs, on his way to Churchill Downs, but he's okay. He lives with the Foley boys, and someone was trying to break into his wife's car, and Tim manned up to the guy, and unfortunately the guy had something waiting for him, and it went somewhere below by his fourth rib, but he's okay. Very, very precarious, dangerous situation, but he was with – Chamonix was with him at the fairgrounds this winter. He was introducing to certain people, and then Steve Bass took him over here.
Right.
So Tim Hamish has Mitchell Morrell's book, A Young Man from Chicago. Good guy. He's in the same circuit as us, 365 days a year. But our best wishes are going out to Tim, who, knock on wood, is okay. Might be a good story to tell, you know, barroom talk later, but it's a little hairy right now.
Unbelievable. Thank you for letting everybody know. That'll because I've not seen that.
This was just hot off the press.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, it was this morning on the way into work. He was doing his job, and there, you know, someone was picking around her car, and you know, so
wild. Make every day count. Clearly,
right. Exactly.
Al's visit is bringing that home in a big way. Let me finish going through these results from Saturday. Goodhart was near the lead for Brendan Walsh. That got him off the duck with Chamonix. There was Beige that was prominent throughout under Alex Achard. That came for Paulo Lobo. Quite a few people, the first three, four races of the day, got their first wins of the meet, which was kind of cool. Raffi Bejarano and Vicky Oliver in the third in that allowance with She's Gone, the Curlin for Watts Humphrey, Chad Brown with the Harrington Rocket, who we saw at Saratoga, with Tyler Gaffalione breaking the maiden as well, and we already talked about something like it, Hot Brown. McLovin, that was a thrilling race, actually. McLovin, Mud Pie, Decision Maker, Current, all within basically a length of each other at the wire, and McLovin paid a nice 16.84. Dulcia, the horse that was much like In Good Spirits, a horse that drew in from the wearing the 15.
Joe Sharp.
Yeah,
that horse wasn't too live, was it?
Exactly.
I saw that thing flying down the stretch where I was sitting. I was saying, well, I didn't hear about that one.
Brad Grady. Well, we actually we talked, Hammer and I. This was the same horse story, and Hammer will talk in a little bit. The same story as what happened with In Good Spirits. I mean, I don't know if they'll see a new on Friday that
yeah,
she
yeah.
was getting
Hal
in.
Wiggins had called a few people with the scratches. Yeah, they do a good job about that, you know, because they understand the complexities of, you know, getting the shipping ready and all that stuff. So they're good about that.
Hey, I'm going to ask you the same question that came up with Buff earlier, and this was a topic that Thursday I had a fun conversation with Keith, Steve Asmussen, and Steve had a what he described as a big, lumbering, kind of timid two-year-old that absolutely was scared to death coming down the hill. And then once they hit the flat and the turn, all of a sudden started a lengthened stride and came, ended up second after trailing by a good ways early. For you, for this venue, in terms of a horse like we talked with Delica, who obviously is versatile and must be light on her feet, but what's your process, your mental process in anticipating whether one of yours is going to like the course?
Yeah, now that's to me, I can't figure it out. I've had horses go over there and just, you can tell after an eighth of a mile that they don't like it. And the jock, the riders who have experience over there, if they don't let them out that much, you know, they feel something. They just don't seem to be comfortable, and that does happen. I mean, I've got two horses running Wednesday that have never set foot on the course, so it's always in the back of your mind. You just have to just lead them over there, and if it happens one year, I certainly wouldn't try it again the next year because it carries over. But I wouldn't think a certain type of horse. I just think whoever has the mental capacity to just go right on with it. I don't think size, foot size, maybe some pedigree possibly, but I just think you just got to try it.
And there it is. And so for those of us that are handicapping, you're hearing that to some degree the horsemen are as in the dark a little as all of us when we're deciding who to play. And I mean, in terms of the babies, I'm looking for, I mean, obviously the turf pedigree, that's easy enough, but also for precociousness, for siblings that have been, you know, that win early types and that have speed. But when it comes to the to those that are three and up, the first thing I'm doing on those PPs is circling the record. Anybody that's got a win, anybody that's been second, even thirds, I want horses that I know have already negotiated it, and I'm starting with them, and I'll go from there.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the way to do it. Just one thing about us, so trainers, gives us a good excuse when a horse runs bad. You know, it's not my fault. It was a surface, so we get a reprieve for about a month till the next race comes up.
Well, it makes it easy to make that phone call. Yeah, he didn't look comfortable coming down there. Absolutely. Got to talk about the sale, Al. How active do you expect to be?
I see, you know, I'm just kind of just, you know, pecking around. The phone doesn't ring off the hook, you know. We just kind of have a few people. I said we, me and my team, Frankie and Daphne Wooten, who are out there grinding away right now. And, you know, we just see what we like and kind of hustle a little bit. You know, a lot of people just see that the sale goes on, then they pick the phone up. I don't really have that many people who will talk well in advance. So, you know, I normally leave the sale with six or eight horses, and if we can do that again this year, I'd be very happy with it.
What is your early read on these first crops? Nicole Russo is going to join us in just a little bit here from DRF, and we'll talk about the supplement. For those of you that haven't been to DRF, you can download the fall sales preview, which has got 25 pages of information. Who are you tracking?
Well, I know who I'm not tracking is the Gunrunner and the Mischief and Justify. So I don't want to get in anybody's way. So, you know, just looking for athletes and trying to match it up. It's just such a grind. And if you could, you know, visualize your hands wide apart, you know, 3 feet apart, and that's how many horses you look at, and you just put them closer and closer together, and you end up with just a tiny amount pared down between the price, the veterinarian, the affordability, and that's just how you do it. So it takes a whole lot of squeezing to get a little bit of juice in the cup at the end. So that's just that's the way I approach it with our you know, medium type bankroll.
How is there anybody that you've been surprised when you've pulled them out and seen babies that appeal to you?
This is my first day, so
okay. So you just started. All right.
Yeah. Well, first day with a short listing, so yeah.
Well, and among the first crops we'll talk about with Nicole, she wrote a piece about Flame Away, which is very funny because we sort of sensed that Flame Away, there was something bubbling over the summer with Flame Away, including the one that showed up at Saratoga.
Well, Scat Daddy, you know, that gives him eyeballs would be on anything that has some Scat Daddy in it. So, I can understand that. I can see that.
We'll let Al get out there and get working, but let me ask you about a couple of horses that we saw over the summer, and where are you with Gilcrease, that more than ready colt?
Gilcrease had a flake in his ankle after the breeze at Saratoga after his race. Otherwise, he would have been in that 6.5 race that Steve won and beat the Doug O'Neill horse. So, but it's okay. He's not the biggest horse in the world, and he's already had the surgery, and Rebecca Makers got him, and she'll fatten him up and get him strong, and you'll see him at the fairgrounds, and we'll try the dirt with him also, because he trained really well on the dirt. So I look at these things once they happen as, you know, if you get through the surgery and everything's fine, it's a blessing in disguise, and they'll be, you know, greater later on.
How about Mass Parade?
Mass Parade is in light training, just gave him a little breather. The guys they're from New Orleans. You know, he's never really had a chance to run in the better races down there, so we might just wait all the way to the Tenacious and let the big boys beat each other up and try and just, you know, make a few dollars and have some fun at home.
Outstanding. And looking for, you mentioned repealing as well, the recent maiden winner. Pyron ran the other day, right?
Yeah, we're going to give him time. He's a whole he hates certain courses and fairgrounds. We know he likes everything down there, dirt and turf. So he's going to get a breather, and he won't have another saddle on his back till he's at the fairgrounds. Whenever the gates open, they let us in, he'll be with the first bunch to go down there.
I love it. And Trafalgar.
Yeah, Trafalgar's just, you know, he's back in training. Gave him a little freshening, you know, disappointed him. We thought he had a chance, and he hasn't run well with very, you know, with no excuses. So we're not sure where he's going to end up, but he would be considered a disappointment.
Well, and they listen, they all can't put their name in lights,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. We got most Saturdays, the horse who just got beaten a maiden allowance race at Churchill, at Saratoga. He'll show up here opening weekend at Keeneland on the dirt also because he trained well. I just didn't want to run in those dirt races up at Saratoga between Todd and Steve and everybody else. To me, it's just a little too tough. But he ran a nice race, and he trained really well in the dirt, so we'll get him back to something he might be comfortable with and give us something to look forward to opening weekend at Keeneland.
Well, we always look forward to conversations with Al Stahl, and even under the circumstances, the way we started to pay tribute to Edward Moss, and with some crazy news from the streets of the Ville, with Tim Hamish, knock on wood, being okay after being shot. Not something you expect to say on the show too often.
No, that was one of my first phone calls real early this morning. I'm like, what?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, no.
Al, I had so much fun Saturday, and just to show you how pleased I was with the win, I actually had a glass of champagne, which is very unusual.
I can see you look like you're a little.
I'm still a little.
You're in recovery mode still. Yeah, that little 2 ounces got to you.
I haven't. That's really the only drinking anymore that I ever do is the occasional. If there's something to toast,
look fresh as the morning dew,
so to speak. Al Stahl, as always, a pleasure. Let me get Nicole Russo stepping over, and we'll get Nicole in. And I got to get it. Let me get a picture of the two of you, if you don't mind, Nicole. Pull the mask. There we go. And this will make it easy. That's a keeper. I love it. Al Stahl, everybody. And Dalika for Paul Varsho. And, of course, Paul on the board at Churchill. Longtime liquor industry, right? Absolutely. Listen, the hardest working girl there is. Paul Brown Foreman. Right. The liquor business and racing, they go hand in glove, without a doubt. And when it comes to sales and breeding, the DRF and Nicole Russo, they're hand in glove. And it is a pleasure to have Nicole join us and give us the preview, the sales preview, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my gosh. This is perfect that we're able to get you and in person. Because you're much more animated in person.
It's good to have you in Kentucky. So
another 10 minutes and I was going to say I'll be a Kentucky Colonel, but somebody made me a Kentucky Colonel years ago. I've got the proclamation thing, which I love.
Excellent.
That is the coolest. We had one of the great Kentucky Colonels of all time. Dan Issel was on with us Thursday from Kentucky Downs. It is the first time, though, Nicole, that I've broadcast from the sale, and it just was a perfect fit. And something tells me this is now going to be a regular part of the post summer action. And given the marketplace that we've been tracking together with you, and given what we saw at Saratoga in the July sale, and even going back to the 2-year-old marketplace, there is every expectation that this will be an absolute monster.
Absolutely. I think, you know, from being on the sales grounds the past couple of days, you know, we've really seen, you know, the amount of foot traffic out here, the number of inspections for these young horses, the number of prominent buyers that you see out here, both domestically and internationally. There's a big contingent. Obviously, that kind of made its return last year, but this is the first year we're really expecting to see pre-COVID numbers of international buyers, which of course creates additional competition in this marketplace. And I think from all of the signs that we saw at, you know, at Fasig Tipton Saratoga, which is really the first test of kind of the upper rungs of this buying bench, I think we're expecting to see a really strong market here for book one over the next 2 days. And that competition is going to create some additional momentum into the rest of the sale, into book two, book three, as the, you know, the people who get shut out a little bit the next 2 days here look to fill their orders for yearlings. And we've seen, you know, we saw last year the pinhookers kind of getting pushed deeper and deeper into the 2 week run of this sale, and then that really created you know, just really strong figures throughout, you know, the second week of this sale. And I think, you know, we're already kind of starting to see the expectation of that a little bit. TaylorMade Sales this morning said that they had horses out, you know, in all of their show rings at their book two barn, you know, before 8 a.m. this morning, and people getting their early looks in for book two. And they're like, well, that's kind of a new record for us. Just, you know, the level of interest and the level of activity at those book two barns early. So I think we're really, you know, we're, again, expecting to see a strong upper end of the buying bench the next 2 days, and then kind of some created momentum into the rest of the sale.
Well, and that, you know, that's funny that, because I kicked off the conversations this morning with the Greens, with Len and John Green, and I said to Len, you know, explain your budget elasticity approach, because you have to look at, you know, you look at the catalog, you get a mental image of where, you know, where a certain hip and a certain page and a certain physical is going to shake out, you know, from a price standpoint. And then I think you have to, you know, we used to think, oh, let's build in a 20% buffer. Now it feels the last couple of years, the last 18 months or more, that you've got to build in like 50% of a buff.
And we saw that at Saratoga, people really saying, you know, when we asked them, you know, we always ask, was this where you thought you would have to go for this horse? And, you know, generally people are sort of like, yeah, you know, we knew this was going to be a seven-figure horse. Good horses cost money. But at Saratoga, we were really seeing people, no, you know, I had him pegged about $500,000 lower. You know, people really having to stretch in their budget. And, I mean, you know, obviously that's when we talk about, you know, that sale breaking records across the board. Keeneland September having a record average and median last year. You know, this is really what fuels those numbers is, you know, people are going to have to stretch on the top level horses, it seems like.
And of course, you know, there's also the reality of updates, of late striking updates. The Cave Rock's
yes.
debut, which came literally minutes before the siblings
the
sold
sibling.
For $700,000, right?
Yeah, and, you know, we have several of those coming up early today. You know, Forte's half-sibling, Forte, who won the hopeful on closing day at Saratoga, coming up early today is a yearling out of Points of Grace, who's, you know, two-year-old Arthur's Ride, placed in a couple of, you know, very strong maiden special weights that, you know, where Dan Ullman and I discussed that horse extensively over the summer on Spa Babies. And, you know, so a lot of updates from these, from summer two-year-olds in this catalog.
We'll get into some hips to watch conversation. I want to reiterate what I mentioned in the last hour. Nicole has prepared the fall supplement, the PDF, 36 pages or so, well, about 18 printed, 18 ads, 18 pages of ads. But Nicole has done a tremendous amount of work in terms of the seasonal preview. It includes hips to watch. It includes regional breeding program information guide. You've got a couple of different articles. Curlin, who is absolutely feeling like the engine on this train. Hillendale's leading son, of course. And you also talked about Flame Away. You gave Flame Away a spotlight, and you and I talked about that one.
Yes.
Flame Away in the Saratoga catalog. And, of course, the Scat Daddy the Scat Daddy juggernaut. And, you know, I'm not going to say this because it'll sound awful, but to some degree, his passing absolutely put the spurs to Mendelsohn and to, well, Justify was going to be popular no matter what, but Justify, Flame Away, Mendelsohn, Scat Daddy's passing created an urgency around the three of them.
Absolutely. It's, you know, a supply and demand issue, you know, and we see it every time these stallions pass. We're going to see it in the coming years with Galileo, with Bernardini. You know, it is a, you know, it's a supply and demand issue. And I think, you know, we saw it right off the bat where, you know, Scat Daddy passed in late 2015. And then the following year, Mendelsohn topped the Keeneland September sale, you know, going to Coolmore because they knew, oh, you know, there just aren't going to be that many well-bred sons of Scat Daddy left. And we've seen that with, you know, the rush to support his sons at stud and their popularity. And, you know, thank goodness they're stepping into those, you know, big hoof prints and carrying on that legacy, because Scat Daddy was still very much on the uprise at the time of his passing. You know, so he, you know, we've really seen his young sons like No Nay Never and some others in Europe, Caravaggio, picking up that banner. We're starting to see it with Justify and Mendelsohn, and you know, he's got more young sons like Flame Away, whose first foals will run next year, you know, coming to market now, and you know, we're seeing that support for them. And Flame Away, you and I had discussed, you know, for him to get that one yearling in the Saratoga sale, which that's a boutique catalog, it's going to lean toward proven stock. You know, for first crop sires to get in there, they have to have the book that supported them, and they have to throw outstanding physicals. And Flame Away to get this yearling in the catalog was really an endorsement of what he's throwing. And then, you know, that horse sold very well compared to his introductory stud fee, and he's selling overall his average very well next to his introductory stud fee.
$7,500, that introductory stud fee. And in fact, there, you know, there's actually a story to be written, I imagine, and we're certainly forever been fans of the Phillips family, and for Darby Dan, that feels like they've got some real momentum operating in a very controlled and you know, kind of under the radar method and practice, you know, not spending exorbitant amounts on stallions, but actually watching and sort of bird dogging. And the potential of Leah Frick, that Leray Visagi started at Rock Ridge, mm-hmm. And then who immediately, I mean, even before anything was offered for sale, there was this realization that Leah Frick was going to need to come to Kentucky.
Yeah, and I think that's, I'm looking forward to starting to see some yearlings by him, because as you said, the fact that he moved to Kentucky this season before any of these yearlings had come to market, anything like that, you know, really says they must have been looking at these foals, at these weanlings, and saying, like, you know, gosh, he's a grade one winner, he's by Candy Ride, he's throwing really nice physicals, let's move him into the Kentucky market. And you know, another first crop yearling sire at Darby Dan, Copper Bullet, we talk about supply and demand, a son of, you know, the late great More Than Ready, who we just lost a couple of weeks ago. And Copper Bullet, I think, you know, Ron Winchell had a really interesting program to kind of, you know, promote him early on, where he said, you know, he had kind of some checkpoints on the mares, and said, you know, if your mare matches up with him physically, nicks with him on this, you know, passes these biomechanical measurements, you know, you're going to get a free season to Copper Bullet, and then we're going to pay you when the mare is in foal at a certain point. So I'm interested to see, you know, kind of what that has come up with, and how some of these sons of More Than Ready start to do in the marketplace, because we've got Copper Bullet, we've got Catholic Boy, and then, you know, a couple kind of coming up in the wings in the coming years.
On the More Than Ready front, we should also mention, of course, that Catholic Boy's first yearlings are going to go through the ring, and he was $25,000 as an introductory number, a horse that actually you would think in today's marketplace, and again, with More Than Ready gone, he has from a racing standpoint, the resume that More Than Ready generally has been thought to offer, which is any kind, turf horse, dirt horse, long, intermediate, you know, kind of a grab bag of potential, you know, production.
Yeah, and I'm really interested in this year's first crop yearling class in both Catholic Boy and Yoshida. They, you know, both represent the Halo line, which, you know, struggled a bit, you know, to keep its traction in the U.S. They are both dual surface grade one winners. Catholic Boy at Claiborne Farm, obviously from the More Than Ready branch of the Halo line. More Than Ready has really, you know, been the one keeping the Halo line alive in the U.S. And then Yoshida standing at Windstar Farm from Sunday Silence's branch of the Halo line. You know, Yoshida now standing in Kentucky. So I'm really interested to see, you know, how their first yearlings are received and if they can start to gain some traction with their first runners next year for that line.
In terms of sheer volume, let's identify a few of these first crop products that they may not appear. In fact, I got the catalog. I can look, but you might have a better handle on this yourself than I do, but 92 Audibles, 54 Catalina Cruisers, 57 Catholic Boys, 77 Matolis, and that's a gaudy number, 25,000 at Spendthrift, 88 Omaha Beaches, and there's real chatter about Omaha Beach, the Warfront Sun, 95 Vino Rossos. Those are the big ticket numbers that we're going to get a real instant read on their saleability.
And coming into this sale, you know, in order, Omaha Beach, Audible, and Vino Rosso holding the top averages of this first crop yearling sire class, all with six-figure averages already. And, you know, all from obviously quality sire lines. You mentioned Omaha Beach by Warfront, Audible by Into Mischief, who is already proving out as the sire of sires. I certainly expect the Into Mischief sons to continue to be popular. But coming back to Vino Rosso, Curlin, you said just kind of, you know, on the engine right now, and Curlin's sons, I expect to really continue to be popular. I mean, obviously, you know, Curlin's sons at stud, he already had Palace Malice. He already had Connect, both with multiple graded stakes winners from their early crops. But then this year, you know, Curlin's sons on the Classic Trail, you had Keen Ice siring Rich Strike, and, you know, another son, Exaggerator, kind of quietly getting in there, the sire of Skippy Longstocking, who's Classic placed. So, you know, Curlin making a run with his sons at the Classics this year, kind of continuing what that sire line is known for. And here you have his Breeders' Cup Classic winning son, Vino Rosso, kind of everything that's good about the line with a six-figure yearling average and very well represented here. Those 95 catalogs, although there are obviously some outs, represent almost half of his first book of mares, according to Jockey Club numbers.
Wow. That's interesting. And I'll throw in a regional Curlin son, because Joe McMahon and I talked about Solomini one morning, not on air. Joe was getting a shoe shine from Bob. And I said, you know, Solomini feels like you're well positioned. And there's only three in this catalog. I suppose there'll be a bunch more at Timonium, more likely.
Yeah, and there were several at the Phasic Tipton New York bred sale up in Saratoga as well, who, again, you know, the number you want to look at is, oh, you know, maybe this horse sold for 20,000. You know, the number doesn't grab your eye, but it's what they're selling for opposite their stud fee. What's the return on investment for the breeder? And when you look at those numbers, you know, some of these regional sons, including Solomini, have done very well.
We'll go back to Matoli for a second, because, you know, when it comes to stallions that left early, you know, most recently, you know, the Daredevil phenomena that ended up seeing Windstar bringing him back from Korea. But the name that doesn't get discussed nearly enough on that topic is Escandereya. And so as a result, Matoli's potential here, and the fact that you know, there's 77 of them in these catalogs, I think that's well worth watching, because Escandereya, had he stayed in North America, I mean, given the limited crops that went through, he got a disproportionate number of successful horses.
Absolutely. And I mean, two of them, it's very interesting to me that, you know, two of them were Met Mile winners, Moore Spirit and Matoli, both of whom now stand at Spendthrift Farms. So they really, you know, went back to the well on that one. And Mattoli, what's interesting to me is obviously his female family has continued to update with Indian Mist going on to produce Hot Rod Charlie. And, you know, Mattoli, you know, on the racetrack, he did everything I think that you want a stallion prospect to do. He showed, you know, he was a sprinter who then showed the ability to carry it to that, you know, mile distance that's so valued in American breeding. The Met Mile historically has been a stallion making race, and that's continued to prove out in recent years. So Mattoli, one of the several promising young winners of that race, and you know, Spendthrift has really made an investment in that type of horse.
Yeah, there's one name that I'm looking in this list, the first crops that certainly I want to touch on. There's only 15, but De Marchelier, the son of Dubawi, and of course, if you think about what Chad Brown and Sal Kumin ended up creating with Slumber, you know, with just a handful of covers, Slumber, it feels like he's, you know, gonna continue to rise. But the Marchelier kind of seems to fit that same potential pattern, and you know, sort of a slightly obscured success on the racetrack that might sneak up on people.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when you talk in terms of stallions globally, there's almost nobody hotter than Dubawi. He's really taking up the mantle as one of the leading living sires in Europe. You know, I mean, when you look at him, leading sire at the Breeders' Cup, leading sire at Royal Ascot, you know, he's really just a superstar. And he's, you know, obviously being a European-based stallion and having much of his success over there, we've had very few sons of his make their way to the U.S. De Marchelier in Kentucky is the first one, you know, getting kind of the big-time shot. He has one other son now standing in Maryland. And, you know, I think it's interesting that Claiborne Farm, almost nobody more respected, that they were the ones to move in and create this partnership and take the chance on De Marchelier. And I think he's going to garner a stellar book of mares with that type of support behind him and just be given every chance at success.
Who else we've really hit on a good number
on
of these.
Good, yeah,
yeah. We got quite a few that World of Trouble has got his first offerings here. And of course, for John Secura and Hill and Dale, John last year you know, really came on and gave a fairly impassioned plea and exhortation for people to give World of Trouble every opportunity, you know, to be a success. And I would think, you know, given those concerns, the Sharp Azteca's performance as a stallion with his first crop, you would think that could easily, you know, be a hint of World of Trouble's potential. After everybody, you know, so many people when the Sharp Aztecas were being offered said, I wouldn't touch that stallion and his produce, you know, because of the association with George Navarro. And yet, here's Sharp Azteca at the top of the first crop stallion list. And World of Trouble may have the same potential.
Sure. And, you know, Sharp Azteca, you see it coming through. And, you know, it's what the horse is throwing genetically. It has nothing to do with, you know, what the horse did on the racetrack and what lens you view those accomplishments through. You know, he is proving out as a stallion based on, you know, his own genetic potential and what he is stamping them with. You know, there's kind of nothing, you know, nothing else going on there with his progeny. You know, in World of Trouble, like you said, you know, kind of tied up in the same sort of stuff, but he's, you know, on the racetrack, he was a dual surface threat. And I think those types of stallions are very interesting right now with the purses we have going in North America and, you know, the incentives for turf racing and the turf opportunities available. And, you know, I think those dual surface stallions like World of Trouble and like we mentioned, Catholic Boy and Yoshida, they're very interesting.
I'm going to throw one more before we move into some of the hips to watch and some of the market forces that we're going to be dealing with. Nicole Russo with us from the Daily Racing Forum, of course, DRF Russo. And I just lost it. I had it, and where'd he go? Enticed. I was surprised. 29 Enticed, the son of Medaglia d'Oro. And I mean, I don't think I saw any enticed advertisements. You know, trying 10,000 at Darley, and he feels like if he bursts on the scene, it's going to be totally on the strength of the horses that he's produced.
Yeah, and I think with him, Darley is a breed to race operation, themselves with their broodmare band. I think a lot of the people who supported Enticed are, breed to race operations. And I think that's why, compared to some of these other first crop stallions, why you're seeing comparatively a smaller number there. But Enticed, graded performer at 2 and 3, very well-bred horse out of that wonderful mare It's Tricky, one of only a couple of foals that she produced before her untimely death. And I think, that's what you're seeing. I think he's been supported by, breed to race operations.
Interesting. All right, let's turn from the first crop topic and get into some of the names and some of the hips that people should be watching for. And again, Nicole's, you can go to drf.com. You'll see the download offer. Basically, any of the Keeneland Sale articles that are standalones are going to have a link to the PDF. Pull the PDF up and do what I did this morning and print it out. I didn't print out all 36 because there was there's the ads, so there's no reason to print the ads. But I've got everything else here, and give us a feel, Nick, for who you're most excited about.
I will say, with the hips to watch, obviously that PDF we put into production a couple of weeks ago, and obviously, we've had some withdrawals from the sale since then, and updates to the sale since then, as you rightly noted. So the hips to watch, we're going to continue to update throughout the sale on drf.com. So be sure to tune in the morning of for the most updated list. But what we've got left from today's session that I'm really interested in, about 2 hours in, when the buying bench is really warmed up, we're going to get Justify's Half Brother by Curlin. And I think Glenwood Farm, has demonstrated that they're not going, to part with these horses for less than their perceived value, because there have been a couple of high ticket buybacks from this family in recent years. But, Curlin, we talked about him being on the engine. He's just got an outstanding book of mares represented in this sale. Stage Magic, Justify's Dam being one of them. We've got a Justify Colt out of Above Perfection, that wonderful mare. This is her last foal, Above Perfection, the dam of Always Dreaming, the dam of Hot Dixie Chick and others. And her yearling last year was a seven-figure yearling, so I'm expecting this, her final foal by a hot freshman sire, to be a high-ticket item. Constitution has a half-sibling to Preakness winner Early Voting, and that's also, I know Early Voting has not continued to update the page, but it's also, the family of Spitestown, of IRAP, and Constitution, this could be a breakout year for him. These yearlings represent the first conceived after his, wonderful 2019 freshman season. Into Mischief got a couple later on, has a colt out of Artemis Agroterra, and then a colt out of Bubbler, making him a half sibling to Arrogate. And Arrogate just continues to improve as a sire. What a loss. Yeah. And this, his final crop of yearlings this year. But if you've got an Into Mischief colt who's proving himself out as a sire of sires, and a half-sibling to Arrogate who's, becoming proven as a sire, and I think, that's going to be a hot commodity. And speaking of, half-siblings to sires, and unfortunately for them, this is a filly by Curlin out of Baffled, the Dam of Constitution, and some others. So a filly from that family, it's really a productive family. So those are some ones that we've got left kind of after outs and updates today.
If you had to make a guess, how many seven-figure sellers did we have last year?
Gosh, Steve, off the top of my head, I cannot remember from last year.
No, I can pull it up. I can get that number. But, that's obviously, I mean, based on what we saw at Saratoga, I mean, which was insanity.
I would say for book one here, with the level of competition that we've seen, where, we'd be looking at double-digit seven-figure horses if the market comes in, based on all of the indicators.
A couple of questions. And, in fact, our man Freddie Moe asked a very germane question as we get into the sale. And Freddie suggesting that the strength of the dollar could potentially impact some of the international buyers. Some thoughts about headwinds provided by a strong U.S. dollar.
Sure. I mean, we'll certainly have to see how that plays out competitively. I do still think that, you know, our international buyers intend to participate. As we've said, you know, they're already here on the sale grounds looking at horses. They didn't just, you know, they didn't make the trip just for Kentucky's scenery and bourbon.
The Bourbon Trail Tour.
You know, so they're going to go home with horses. You know, we'll just have to see. I think it's going to depend on how far they have to stretch for those horses. Maybe somebody who came in intending to buy three or four goes home with two if they had to, you know, if they had to stretch for them. I think we're going to have to, you know, talk to them as this plays out and see. You know, I do expect they'll participate, but, you know, their level of participation is, you know, just going to depend on the temperature when we get in there.
In terms of the buying bench, love saying buying bench is such an insider term. Tromping around, Nicole, and what do you see? What are you hearing from the consigners in terms of who's on hand? I mean, you know, we're in the ring, actually. And so, you know, most of those that are pulling horses out of stalls are down, you know, in the barns and, you know, working the hill right now, especially, you know, because time is running short toward
They're doing their vetting for tomorrow's session, and they're starting to look at book two horses. It's, you know, it really never stops here. Everybody has to be a tremendous multitasker at these sales. Not only the buyers who are juggling, you know, those, you know, kind of their short lists and vetting out the horses and looking at books ahead, but, you know, the consigners as well. Some of them, you know, such as, you know, Hillendale and others, who will actually be buying horses themselves later on. It's really you know, it's a tremendous undertaking on both sides of the equation. And, you know, the multitasking is really, you know, something that will amaze you if you spend a day with these people.
Any names or, I mean, anybody that is noted, and this is something as much for Tony Lacey and the company, but, you know, we always are watching for new participants, people following up, of course, from Saratoga. You mentioned the boutique nature of the Saratoga sale, and plenty of people, you know, got turned away, simply just couldn't get a horse home. So they'll turn here, and it may be that book one is going to be too competitive, and they turn to book two and three. But a feel for the, you know, the market condition and those that are out here shopping.
Well, I mean, everybody's out here. Just everybody's out here shopping is the short answer. I think something we saw at Saratoga that you're going to see again, as, you know, straight from Terry Finley's mouth, the power of the partnership, how, you know, it allows people to stretch a bit further on these competitive lots, you know, when they join forces instead of bidding against each other. And you won't see more than one major farm go in on a horse, because of course you're looking at the residual value of the horse and where, you know, he might stand down the line in the case of a stallion prospect. But perhaps Spendthrift Farm will take a couple of partners to buy a horse. They've frequently been partnering in recent years with My Race Horse and with the new BSW Crow Colts group intended for Brad Cox that began buying last year and has become, you know, kind of a, you know, a high ticket buyer in some partnerships. You know, Coolmore joined forces with Peter Brand at Saratoga, and Coolmore might take a partner or two on a horse. You know, so I think that, you know, that kind of partnership approach is something that we're going to continue to see. Commonwealth Racing, they're a newer partnership at the higher end. They own a piece of Country Grammar, and I think they're out here looking, and we could see them in partnership on, you know, some horses this week.
Speaking of which, you made me think, because I brought it up, saw the email alert that came out about Flight Lines going to Lane's End. Not that given some of the connections makes some sense, obviously, but thoughts on Flight Line's landing place.
Gosh, he's, you know, it was no surprise that, you know, Lane's End made that official announcement. Obviously, the Farishes are involved with the horse through Woodford Racing. Hronus Racing, you know, has a history with Lane's End, Standing Accelerate, Catalina Cruiser there. Lane's End consigned this horse as a yearling, obviously very familiar with him. You know, so there are a lot of connections there. And Lane's End loves to stand classic distance horses. A Flight Line just made a mockery of, you know, that classic distance test in the Pacific Classic, making very good horses behind him look very ordinary, quite frankly. You know, so Flightline has that, which is always attractive to Lane's End. And then he also, you know, showed that, you know, 7 furlong miler ability that we talk about in the American Stallion market. So just really, you know, if you were looking at him as a stallion prospect, just tremendously exciting. I really don't know what else to say. I'm still trying to get my jaw off the floor from the Pacific. I do this job because I love being around horses, and it's a privilege to see exciting horses, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing Flightline at the Breeders' Cup.
Well, we'll all be back here, of course, and in fact, I've explained we're in the back ring, and we work right here during Breeders' Cup. This is where we congregate, so we'll be back in here in just a handful of weeks. But Nicole, I appreciate the Michael Blowen wandering in. I look up, and there's Michael Blowen.
We always see Michael Blowen.
That's funny.
Michael's everywhere.
Michael is everywhere. He's ubiquitous. Pretty funny. We'll check in, Nicole, you know, a couple of times and get as the books start to roll out. We'll check in with you, and this was a unique, rare opportunity to converse and to preview the sale. And I think we had the potential sale topper, speaking of Flightline, the sibling. We had that one kind of taken out from under us by Jane Lyon, but we can't blame Jane at all.
Not at all, my goodness. Jane Lyon, you know, walking around, was still with some horses in the Lane's End consignment. Jane Lyon with a smile on her face all weekend here, and who could blame her?
Nicole Russo, everybody, DRF Russo, let's take a break here. We're into hour three, and we've got about 40 minutes to kind of do some more of the weekend recapping, and we'll see who else comes by and we can draw in. But thanks so much to Nicole for a fabulous kickoff to Keeneland 2022, and what should be just a banner sale back to the biggest yearling sale in the world. 3,000, 3,200, 3,400. What are we looking at?
More than 4,000.
4,000. Well, 4,000 minus the outs. Back to Keeneland after this.
On Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The Southern California Thoroughbred Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos with opening day set for Friday, September 16th. Four stakes races highlight the meet led by the Los Alamitos.